Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. Oh, 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 oh.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Greetings and welcome to this, the 24th episode of the Merry Little Podcast. My name is Jeff Westover, host of this and the Full Hour Merry Podcast, found exclusively at our website, MyMerryChristmas.com. It was some 20 years ago this month that I received one of the very first critical emails ever about an article I had written for My Merry Christmas, an article that talked about the differences between Christmas and Easter. Now, it's not our mission at My Merry Christmas to be controversial in any way, but in those early days, I was, well, a bit defensive in our efforts to just wish the world a Merry Christmas, and so I emailed the guy back, trying my best to answer his assertions and to counter his arguments. In the years since, I've learned a great deal about email the website tends to bring in, and I'm probably not so quick to answer it so much anymore, but back then I did. It happens quite a bit that people will reach out based on something that they read on a website. In fact, earlier this year, I was contacted via Facebook about another article that I also wrote in 1998, telling a more personal story. It was a story told to me by my grandmother, who had spent part of World War II, those years, as a school teacher in a Japanese relocation center in a remote desert area of Utah. It was a Christmas story, a true story, and one that I've shared at various times and in various ways. As with many of the things we published, that story was taken by another website, just picked up wholesale and published without our knowledge or permission, and it was seen by this lady who contacted me last fall on Facebook, a 20-year-old article. And she was asking if I was the person who had written the article, and more importantly, if the person I was talking about in the article, the school teacher who had taught her mother, was in fact an 8-year-old child living in the same Japanese relocation center, if she was indeed my grandmother. Well, that's one of the real beauties of the internet. I hear it all the time in the world of family research and what's happening now in our generation with DNA research. You don't have to go far online to learn the stories of the adopted and the abandoned as children who have learned their family history through DNA research and have made online connections instantly with family they've never known. And the stories are wonderful. The world has just become smaller thanks to the internet, and it brings us together, even those perhaps we were never meant to know before. Such was the case with this lady last fall who contacted me about my grandmother, and such was the case most certainly with this man who took such great exception to what I wrote in 1998. He's atheist, you see, and while he had a Christian upbringing, he abandoned his faith shortly after leaving home, and really became critical of it all when he went to college. Now, I honestly do not recall what it was I said in the article that set him off, not now. But we began an email dialogue that has survived somehow from that day to this, 20 years. Now, we've never met, and our conversations have long ago expanded beyond the argument of 1998. He's a few years older than I am, and he lives in New England. He has children, though he's been single for many years now. I think our relationship took a softer turn in 2001 after 9/11. It was an event that impacted us both significantly. He lost several friends in that event, while I lost one. We spent a lot of time discussing those events and politics and religion and the nature of man as a result of that terrible day. We have also, over the years, exchanged Christmas cards. And even though he is faithless, he has continued to celebrate Christmas, a fact that I find strange not at all. I know many people who are just like him. And it's not weird to me, though there are those out there who think that it is. If there's anything I've learned, it's that it's a big world, and Christmas means many things to different people. And I don't think it's an unusual thing for an atheist to celebrate Christmas. He's never engaged in the Merry forums, but he's been a loyal listener to the podcast, and it's only with his permission that I tell his story here, just so long as I keep his name and his personal details out of it. This year, from him, I received a Christmas card, as I usually do, but it was a little different this time. In fact, it has remained, as have all the cards I've received since last fall, on display here in my home. His striking card simply shows three wise men on camels following a star. Well, I know you're wondering, why are my cards still up? Well, it's simple. My tree is still up too, as are the lights outside, and today, while the snow flies here, my house looks downright in season, even though it's near the end of March. And it's all my neighbor's fault. My neighbor, who most certainly does not listen to the podcast, thinks every Christmas tree should come down at midnight on December 25th, and that's fine for her. But she has a nagging habit of asking my wife when we're going to take down our tree, and it has been this way every year, and, well, since we've lived in this house. Now, normally I'm not so stubborn, but I told my wife this year that every time she complains about the tree, it stays up another 2 weeks. And here we are on the doorstep of Easter, and, well, the other neighbors are starting to talk. But I'm holding my ground. Until she shuts up, the tree stays up. But those cards, that wonderful byproduct of the Christmas card exchange we do on My Merry Christmas each year, well, those cards may well survive until the new ones come in to replace them next year. You see, when I got this card from my atheist friend, I thought for a minute that maybe he was mocking me, giving me a hard time. We do that a little bit, or rather, we have done that now and then over the years. We give each other a hard time. You see, it's kind of a male thing. He's a rabid Yankees fan, and I'm a Giants fan. This is just the kind of things that males do. Anyway, I would be lying if I didn't tell you that his card made me a little curious, because inside the card he had written, "No, I'm not a convert yet." And of course it was his "yet" that caught my eye. But I didn't ask him about it. I sent him my card first, and his arrived about a day before Christmas, and I haven't emailed him since. In fact, it's been something of a blue winter for me, a kind of a season with a lot of tough news after Christmas, and this, I candidly admit, has been one of the reasons why there hasn't been any new episodes of the podcast, and that caught the attention of my old friend, and I received another email from him the other day. "Hey pal," he writes, "I gave you a big reason to ask me questions and you didn't bite. What's wrong? I really need to talk to you. Can you call me?" Well, now, this is a very unusual request from this old friend of mine. Even though his travels and my travels have taken us on occasion within proximity to each other, we've never met. Our relationship has always been online through the written word. One of the first times he heard my voice was through a podcast I did in 2010. I've talked to him now twice on the phone before. Once when he had surgery, and again after my mother died, he called me. So a phone call between us would mean something kind of significant, and so I called him, perhaps feeling a sense of worry and concern for him that maybe he had bad news. But he said, "You're the only person in my life who won't mock me for what I'm about to tell you." Then he began to share with me a very, very profound spiritual experience. Now, this happened to a man who doesn't pray. He doesn't attend church. He has long professed an antagonistic attitude towards God and those who believe in him. He could not be more shocked at what happened to him. He is now questioning everything, his eyes open to possibilities like never before. He is suffering from some guilt and from some confusion. It is, I would think, a very vulnerable time for him. I would tell you that from what I know, he is a man like, well, anyone else. He works, he pays bills, he's bitter about his ex-wife, but is wholeheartedly devoted to his children. He loves baseball, the Olympics, and early American history. We have much in common, but our paths separate in the matters of faith. He is especially critical, I would admit, of my Mormon faith, and he has not been shy in telling me that over the years, and despite his recent revelation, he swears to me I'll never make a Mormon of him. So his sharing of his story and his experience these past couple of months has surprised me a little bit. I think it speaks well of his character that he would trust me with that information. And I know better than to doubt him. And I know better still not to make light of what he has gone through. Now, I would be less than human if I didn't admit to wanting to say, "See, I told you so," throughout all of this. But, well, this is an earth-changing thing for him. And in a way, I kind of envy him. After all, he's pushing 60 years old, and his spiritual awakening is just beginning. I know from experience that he stands at the threshold of thrilling discovery, and that if he opens his heart and lets God be God, there is no limit to what he will learn. In truth, I'm honored that he would share this with me and would seek out my opinion as he reconnects with his spiritual life. I think he knows me pretty well. He knows about my deep involvement with my family's heritage and the experiences there that I've shared through a website devoted to that. So I know he knows about personal miracles and personal revelation and what can happen within a family. And like so many spiritual experiences I hear about, his spiritual experience is related to his family. And that is as much as I feel comfortable telling you about. What struck me in our conversation, however, was his connection of his spiritual experience to both Christmas and Easter. "Christmas," he said, "I get. I can see why people would be excited about God being born into the world. I want to be like that shepherd who saw the angel, but I cannot run throughout the countryside telling people what I've seen and heard. They would think me nuts. But Easter," he said, "truly confounds me." Well, this man's religious upbringing was in a Catholic school in his youth. I'm not sure what it was like in his family. Very traditional is what I suppose. But my exposure and experience in dealing with teachings of Easter and the Catholic faith tells me there's a great deal of focus on the suffering and death of Christ and original sin of all men that we're supposedly born with, at least according to the Catholic faith. I did my best to explain to him that Easter is more about overcoming death. When Christ arose the third day, he wasn't saying that was when he became God. He was saying that we would overcome death and live again as well. And to this, my friend very quickly agreed. He said, "I know that now." Sometimes I wish there was more joy associated with the Easter holiday. I wish there was more of that sense of overwhelming rejoicing, of pure worship and praising God, because to me, Easter means just that. It's a miracle. I reminded him that my mother passed away on Easter morning, and while any day of the year would be a significant day for me to remember, it was especially meaningful to me on a personal level that the first of my family to pass would go on Easter. Now, Easter has always been more of a subdued and personal observance for me, and it remains that way, as I told him, because of the spiritual significance of it all to me. You see, Christmas to me is the start of my celebration of Christ, and Easter is the culmination of it. As Easter comes and goes, I build to yet another great celebration. Well, my friend feels he needs to do more now to celebrate Easter, and this really surprised me. He feels he needs to do more now to celebrate Christmas, or perhaps to celebrate Christmas a little differently. When I asked him what he meant by that, he said, "I don't know. I was hoping you could tell me." Well, how would you answer such a question? How can you tell one who is new again in his faith how to best honor God and celebrate the Christ? I told him that he will know what to do when the time comes. I told him that his responsibility now was to learn to have a relationship with God, and to learn to pray and to learn to listen. And I told him that it was time for him once again, with a new heart, to take up his scriptures and to study. Things like Christmas will take care of themselves as he goes along. Well, now, friends, I don't know what happens. My old friend, like my children, has his own spiritual journey to take, and it's different than mine and different than yours. I cannot explain why this happened to him. Why now? He's not sick. There's no major crisis going on in his life. He's lived a good, orderly pattern in things. He's been a good person, a great contributor to society despite his voting record, and he's been a kind and devoted friend to me, and I'm sure everybody else that he's encountered. This happened, and I couldn't tell you why. But I know how this story ends. He is going to die. And I am going to die, and you are going to die. We are all going to die. It is the great and last thing we all hold in common. None of us gets out of this alive. And we'll realize then that we're not dead. And that's the lesson of Easter. Intelligence, as the scripture goes, cannot be created or made. It just is. And if the glory of God is intelligence, then we are the glory of God. In fact, he said, "This is my work and my glory, to bring to pass the immortality and eternal life of man." That is Easter. To my friend, that's worthy of the greatest of celebrations we can imagine. And thank goodness we have the days of Christmas and Easter to recognize it all. Please join us at the Merry Forums at MyMerryChristmas.com, where we engage in the year-round celebration of both the sacred and the secular of Christmas, and we want to hear your stories of Christmas and what it means to you. For all of us at the Merry Forums, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.